What's good, everybody? It's your boy Joel here for another episode of the Global Citizen Podcast, an election day episode of the Global Citizen Podcast. Today I have two special guests. One is the lovely Maya Perkins, blogger and writer Maya Perkins, who will talk about some of the things she's written recently, specifically about A Seat at the Table, Solange's new album. She will also give her thoughts on today's elections. And the second guest is a Global Citizen Podcast favorite, Tristan, who's back to give his final thoughts on today's election. Check it out and enjoy. Everybody, it's your boy Joel, live for another episode of the Global Citizen Podcast, coming to you live from the 718, Brooklyn.
BK,
it's been a minute. I came from Central African Republic, then back to Nairobi. I'm home for a little bit. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, but today I'm live from, we're live from Brooklyn, what's this, Brookline?
This is Bedvine Cocktail, which is a part of the whole
Bedvine Cocktail.
Shout out to Bedvine. Bedvine Brew is around the corner. We have Bedvine Wines and Spirits. We're at Bedvine Cocktail in the backyard in this beautiful Bedford-Stuyvesant neighborhood.
Shout out to Bedvine. Shout out to Bedford-Stuyvesant. So my guest is already jumping on the mic is the lovely Maya Perkins. She is a freelance writer, uberlicious blogger, an all-around bon vivant, lover of life.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I feel like we actually met before the new school.
No, we did meet before the new school.
Yeah, like at a bar or something.
Exactly.
Like right in the neighborhood. I don't remember which bar it was.
Yeah, one of them. It's probably closed now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I was telling my friend about that I was going to interview you, and I was saying that you know how it works in Brooklyn. You kind of meet someone, and then you just keep seeing them.
Yeah.
And then the circle is smaller than you think that Bed-Stuy, Crown Heights, Fort Greene circle.
Right.
Which is what you're doing.
Yeah.
But thank you for being on the show. So you were asking me why I wanted to have you on. I was trying to explain it to you. I mean, you know, just from knowing you for, you know, we met, but we probably know each other longer than we realize. Mm-hmm. It's probably been like 5-6 years, maybe.
Definitely.
And in that time, you're always doing interesting things. I feel like there isn't a day that goes by that whenever you show signs of life on social media, I'm like, yo, this girl's in Dubai. You called me from Dubai one time asking about the new school.
True, yeah.
I was like, hello?
Like, who, where are you? What's going on?
But yeah. You're on House Hunters in Dubai.
House Hunters International.
International.
Yes.
You came here, and you've kind of been blogging, writing about a lot of interesting things. Today's music, mm-hmm. and you're also an Uber driver.
Yes.
And you share stories about your Uber encounters, and I think a lot of people appreciate that. I don't think you realize it, but they do. But welcome to the show again.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem.
You know, I always love to, you know, reconnect with old friends, and even more so, I'll be able to just have moments for just real conversations and, you know, being able to build and just discuss and not be under some type of, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. But,
no, you like know. You want it to be free-flowing.
Right, there's no pretense or, you know, it's just like, let's catch up and talk about life and what's going on. And I really appreciate, you know, I'm on social media and I am kind of just
on social media
wilding out and just not blogging, but posting about any random thing. Mm. But the one, you know, people always reach out and they're like, yo, I follow you on Facebook. I have no idea because most of the time people don't comment.
No, I mean,
But some people do. Shout out to my friends, you know, Facebook friends and real life friends and, you know, all the other friends in the atmosphere. But it's just like sometimes I don't realize how, I guess, the expanse of my reach.
Well, I also think that probably you don't realize the expansiveness. That's a word of your reach.
Mm-hmm.
But the things you comment on, there's a lot of crazy things going on, you know? And you're not reserved about how you feel.
Yeah, this
and
is true.
Also, when you kind of comment on something, it's very real and funny. But it's just like, you laugh, but it's like, yeah, I totally see where she's coming from. But you're talking about life. So what have you been up to these days?
Okay, so a year at this point, almost a year and a half ago, I finished at the New School, much like yourself.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My MA in International Affairs with a concentration in media and culture. The plan when I finished at the New School was to go into a PhD program. But like that plan has since changed. And a part of that was also, well, I need time to kind of prepare to put in an application and all these different things. And I also wanted to just focus on being a freelance writer. You know, what can I do if I really try to put myself out there and spend time not only getting gigs related to, you know, writing or editing, but actually coming up with my own original creative content, you know, either for a book or a screenplay or, you know, what have you. And so in doing that over the last year, I mean, one has to make money as well.
Yeah.
Because freelancing, as wonderful as it is, and as much as I get a chance to kind of just, you know, do life the way that I want to, you know, I decided to drive Uber as well in order to be able to just supplement income. But even that has opened up a whole nother kind of like reality about what it takes to bring in substantial money as an Uber driver.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Are you cut out or am I cut out to drive for 12 hours
a day?
A day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nah, I'm more like a four to five hour a day driver. And so
a lot of the Uber drivers that I've, so Nairobi, Uber's huge. Nairobi's a game, and Uber in Nairobi's a game changer. I mean, Uber itself is a game
worldwide,
changer.
I'm sure.
But a lot of the drivers really, it's like kind of the same thing that you say. They're doing a number of things, and they see it as a positive way. Some see it as a positive way to supplement income.
It really is. I mean, we can circle back to that.
Right.
You know, just to come back to what I'm actually doing. So, it's been a year of kind of like exploration, you know, I think I freaked my parents out a bit when I told them that I was going to be driving Uber.
It's always a good thing to freak out your parents.
when I finished my MA at the New School.
Yo, and quick shout out to your parents.
Yo, my parents, Chucks and Babs. Charles and Bob Perkins.
I'm like, yo. Yes. Pop still got it. Mom still got
it. Yes. They are wonderful. So dope. So supportive.
Even
I mean,
people,
I made
I'm like,
yo,
like.
Yeah. Definitely. So it's been a year of great exploration. And to go back to my trajectory, like I finished undergrad at Howard University. Shout out to all my Bisons. HU, you know. But I finished at Howard in 2000. You know what I mean? 16 years ago. 20 years ago from just becoming an undergrad.
Right.
And so I feel like, you know, from Howard to coming to New York in 2006 to do my MFA at Sarah Lawrence in creative writing to going to the New School in, I guess that was 2013.
For the New School.
Yeah, for the New School. I have 3 degrees, 1 bachelor's, an MFA, and a MA. But, like, there's a lot of work experiences and very, you know, varied paths that I've had an opportunity to kind of explore, you know, marketing, advertising, education, being both, you know, teaching on the university level and teaching internationally on the high school level, you know, where I was in the United Arab Emirates teaching English to Arab teenage boys, the Habibis, I called them. but with all of those experiences, one thing kind of has kind of remain is that any one job that I did for a short amount of time, I got the feeling like, this is not me.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, you go in the dressing room and try on some clothes, and they may even fit a bit or it may be off, but you're just like, nah, that's not what I'm looking for.
Right.
And it's really interesting because I didn't imagine that 16 years after my BA, I would still be trying to kind of figure out my professional path.
Right.
But the one thing that has remained is that, like, my passion for writing, for telling stories, for taking the words on the paper and, you know, working with them, toiling with them, repurposing them, making them shine and everything. Like, that's really, that, like, I'm a blue collar writer.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I do well. That's my craft. That's my tool. And so it may not even be that I haven't figured out my professional path. Is that I know what it is that I do. I just haven't, to date, figured out how to make substantial money doing it.
No, writing and freelancing is tricky. I feel like a lot of the people I know who do write, it's really hit or miss. And the people who hit, they hit with something big, they gain a reputation and they continue to get, like, the same type of pieces.
Right. Like, it, like, one of my passengers told me, because I have, like you said, it's a bit of a Humans of New York kind of sensibility within my Uber car and my rides. And so I have these heartfelt and heartwarming, heart-to-heart conversations with a lot of my passengers, not all of them by any stretch of the imagination, but one gentleman, older white gentleman in New Jersey, I'm taking him further into New Jersey than I wanted to be.
Right.
And so we're having a long conversation about me being a writer, and he's like, look, it only takes one.
Yeah, it's true.
He's like, it only takes one that sells and hits big, and there you are. Your career, your reputation, your career has taken the quick right that you maybe didn't even see coming.
Where do you see that kind of that quick hit coming from, or where would you like to see it from? Like, what kind of writer would you say that you are? You say you're a blue collar writer, but, like, you know, when you read something somewhere, you're like, oh man, like, you know, I could definitely see my work being in this publication.
Right. I mean, I don't limit where I can see my work being published. Mm. However, I have a lot of people that read my work that say, oh wow, I could see you having a column in The New Yorker.
Yeah.
Or I could see you, you know, writing for Rolling Stone. Or, you know, all of the, of course, all of, like, those standard, you know, maybe I'm not going to go work for, well, I'm not going to even finish the statement. Because who knows? You know what I mean? But that's more on the editorial side. Mm. Like, I give creative space, i.e. daydream about being able to pull together a bomb screenplay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would love to eventually finish what I would hope would be either autobiographical story or semi-autobiographical. Some of the things I've experienced a lot. That's a whole different type of podcast. But a lot of what I've, you know, experienced throughout my travels in New York and around the world, like, I don't necessarily want to put onto an autobiographical, you know, version of myself. Because, you know, I kind of feel like people can be harsh, you know what
they
I mean?
Really,
like, you
can
disclose something for the sake of being able to, like, just say, this is my experience, whatever, and then it's just like social media can just jump on you.
I also think it's probably because in social media, a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
And maybe people are jaded from seeing it, so instead of it having, like, an initial, I wouldn't say shock factor, but any type of reaction, they just start to say, well, you know, we've seen this already, so we're going to, like, bash it.
People become infamous instead of being famous. And I'm not chasing fame. Like, even the more that I kind of realize kind of, like, this beast of, you know, just, like, the backlash of social media, people flexing their muscles, and, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or, you know, and just any one little detail can just run roughshod and just derail whatever you're trying. So I think about that a lot, but I would like to have great success. It doesn't necessarily need to come with, like, fame.
Yep.
Just the fortune will be very nice.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I know.
But
I know.
Back to the point of what I would like to write. I guess right now the biggest challenge that I would like to overcome, or not even overcome, but, like, just approach and move past the benchmark, is to actually complete one thing. You know what I mean? I do a lot of small projects, especially for other people. You know, I write for Pop Magazine, which is a music publication.
Shout out to them.
Shout out to Pop Magazine, Marvels. but he's based in Berlin, you know, the editor, publisher. And To tell the truth, I'm not even sure how he found me. Years ago, I used to kind of sing and somewhat co-host an open mic in Brooklyn.
Okay, where in Brooklyn?
At the Five Spot over on Myrtle Avenue.
Okay.
And rest in peace, Anissa. She was the host. She passed away already. But like Nate Jones, who was a very dope bass player, a very good friend of mine, who really envisioned and created the whole what was Soul For Real and became Taste the Stage, and is still very much going on now up in Harlem, at a spot the name escapes me, but this live music movement where people can just come and hone their skills on the mic, whatever you do, if you sing, if you do poetry, if you rap, whatever it is, like
you do
Nate.
What you do.
Yeah, from 2005 even through now. Tonight is Wednesday, I think they're going on up on, you know, like over by Fairway Uptown. But I believe that's where Marvels, who is the publisher of Pop Magazine, and I originally met. And sometime, like years later, he inboxed me like, yo, like I'm starting this magazine. I've read some of the things that you've done. I would love it if you would be a contributor, you know. And for a long time, I was the only contributor.
Right.
And finally, he started getting. And so it's not even that I make like a lot of money from writing, but he's given me an opportunity and a platform to have like a consistent body of work.
Where you continue to hone your craft.
Yeah, I continue to hone. And then like certain things, like when To Pimp a Butterfly came out, and when like Solange's A Seat at the Table came out. I mean, I review everything from Madonna to First Aid Kit to, you know, people, you know, independent artists. And sometimes I can phone it in to tell the truth. You know, I've come up with my own kind of, what do you call it, like template and strategy, you know, to come up with the content I'm going to use to review an article, or I'm sorry, to review an album or to do an artist spotlight. But when people like Blitz the Ambassador, you know, when Blitz's album comes through, I'm like, yo, I'm about to sit back and really let
this
soak in.
Listen to this so I can write it.
When To Pimp a Butterfly comes in, I'm like, gonna really, and, you know, those are the articles when they go out, you know, I may never hear, you know, I may have written about Jennifer Lopez's last album and it was the job. So I sent it and didn't expect to hear anything and didn't really hear anything. No tea, no shade to Jennifer Lopez. Shout out to J-Lo. But
shout out to J-Lo.
It's
Jenny
like,
from the block.
But it's like when I had a seat at the table before I even got the assignment to write about it. And I was listening to it for a good 3 or 4 days. And I emailed the publisher, like, I emailed Marvels, like, do you need a review for this? Because I need to say something about this. You know what
this
I mean?
Shit sucks. Sorry.
No. No,
I'm saying that. That's me.
Yes, this was her Miseducation album. This was like her. This was her To Pimp a Butterfly.
Whatever. Shout out to Jenny for Keep Getting Money. But let me ask you about Pop Magazine. So the last article I saw, you wrote about Solange's new album, which I think got a lot of positive reviews from. Well, by reviews,
Have
I think a lot of people like.
It?
I listened to a few songs.
I mean, from top like plus play on one. So this is. There are some albums where you can listen to a few songs kind of sporadically and be like, oh, okay. And then there are albums where you press play on track one and you listen the 59 minutes until you get to the end of the album. This is that. That's why I say it's her Miseducation and her To Pimp a Butterfly moment. Not to continue to make comparisons, but it's like a full arc. You know, it's like there's something that you gain from listening from the very beginning. Zero, you know, from the first second all the way to when Master P says his last, because Master P has a number of snippets of an interview, so there's like all these little interludes.
In her album?
Yes.
Wow.
Where Master P, who is talking about, how he's talking about just the value and self-worth of being a, you know, a Black American entrepreneur in the music business. And how, like, it was really a lot of things that were instilled in him from his grandparents, you know, and just that own self-worth of being like, you know what, maybe I might get this deal for $1 million, but I'm going to decline it, because if they want to give me $1 million, I must be worth $40 million.
Wow.
You know,
bold
and,
enough to think that
and
way.
And him having that insight at the beginning,
right.
Even, you know. So it's like he's talking about these different things. And one thing I read about in an interview that Solange did with her, I guess with her mom, or she was talking to Complex, but she said, growing up, she was like, first of all, my sister and I have the same mother and the same father.
Right.
So,
and Solange is older than Beyonce, right?
No, she's younger.
She's younger.
Yeah, she's younger. But she's like, we have the same mother and right. father. So, like, we came up under the same, you know, kind of, like, very woke, you know, strong-minded, yeah. you know, clear understanding of who we are as Black Americans. And she's like, I remember way back when we were little girls, like our father, who, you know, their father, Matthew Knowles, respected Master P so much just for being like this entrepreneur who was doing things on his terms.
Right.
You know, and so I, from reading that and then listening to the album, was like, oh, so what, she had called Master P to come in and do like a couple of minutes of what was supposed to be an interlude, mm-hmm. and they end up talking for a good 2 hours.
And
she's like, yeah, she's like, look, we need to just splice this up and just disperse all of this throughout the album. So, like, there's this narrative and a thread that you don't get from listening to one or two songs
right.
That frame the entire album. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I do. Do you think that, so when you listen to that and you listen to something like her album and you appreciate and you do research into it and you're able to kind of understand the intricacies of everything that she's doing, do you think like an average person who listens to music, they do that, or do you think that doesn't really
no people are not as intricate. Like this is the, you post, a lot of times people post articles on their timeline that they haven't read,
right.
you know what I mean,
right?
Or I remember even one of my professors at the New School, it was like in one of the media classes, and she was like, look, if someone has to scroll twice on their phone, like the article is too long.
Yo, even for me, and I'm realizing that lately, that I'm not fully reading through articles because they're too long, unless I really force myself, or if it's in another language. If it's in French,
mm-hmm.
I'll read all of it because I have to read it slowly to yeah. understand it, and I'm like concerned. I'm concerned about it because I'm just like, I need to change something, or like start reading magazines.
And I'm the same. Like, you know, I got a criticism the other day. Like, yo, you didn't even read the whole article. And I constantly tell people
you're
that.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I didn't read it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I'm the pot calling the kettle black and everything. But and I think about that even as I write. You know, as I prepare to write. You know, I'm going to be writing about Alicia Keys' album soon, and a couple of other ones are coming out. But, you know, I'm like, okay, word count matters. Hashtag word count matters. You know, mm-hmm. people aren't reading things that are super long. And if they are, like, it'll be weeks later. They'll open the tab and read it, like, yeah. 3 weeks later, that type of thing. So everybody is not going to... No, everybody's not going to go and try to find out the whole backstory to Solange's album.
Right.
You know, but... I think word of mouth is real. You know what I mean? Enough people will listen to it and then tell someone else and tell someone else. And then, like, things start to go, you know, viral and whatnot.
I'm low-key more interested in her than Beyonce. And shout out to Beyonce and the
Beehive. Yeah, Beyonce is going to be on the Beehive. Country Music Awards tonight. Singing with the Dixie Chicks. Wow. I heard the country music fans, they mad. They outraged.
Why do they want?
I don't know, you know, folks, all Lives Matterers, they're like anti-Beyonce because...
Yeah. We didn't like what she did at Super Bowl. And,
So
let me ask you this, now that you bring up All Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. So
Lord.
So you talk about like an important 16 years in your life, like from when you started your BA to where you are now.
20.
Yeah, but like, how have you seen kind of things manifest itself in terms of like... race, in terms of what you're trying to do, because you know we're around the same age, and it's just like to be able to see like kind of where we are now, and me living in Kenya, like I look back at what's going on in this country, and I just see it kind of going to hell in a basket, you know, and maybe
a flaming basket,
But like, can you kind of believe where we are right now, or were you kind of always like, well, I saw this coming?
No, who could see? Who literally, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or Independent, who really could have anticipated that in the 2016 election, a Donald Trump would literally be, like, a contender against...
Having a good chance of winning.
Having an actual chance of winning the highest office in the land against Hillary Clinton. No, there's no way I could have anticipated. I think it's great political theater.
Yeah, that it is.
At the very least, that's what it is. There's so many conspiracy theories. There's so many ideas about, you know, maybe this isn't even real. Like, maybe some kind of way. Like, this is just all to get Hillary into office in the first
place. I've heard that.
Because, you know, maybe Donald Trump doesn't even really, truly want to be president.
Yeah, I kind of believe that.
You know, I kind of believe it, but, like... It doesn't matter what we believe. It matters what the voters in the swing states believe.
Right.
And, like, they, for sure, are on some... Well, not they, as in the voters in the swing states, but the ones who are in support of, you know, a Trump ideology are very much the ones who are going to be voting next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And,
what are the swing states again? It's like Ohio, Pennsylvania.
Ohio, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Florida, Virginia... Colorado, did I say? There's a couple of more. I feel like I'm not sure if North Carolina is or not, but there's definitely, you know, those.
Mm.
And where Bernie is,
New Hampshire.
Yes, is a swing state, and so
great hiking in New Hampshire.
And so it's just like this idea. I have friends who are voting for Jill Stein, and I always say I'm just really glad that you guys are not registered in
swing states.
Yeah. You know, if you are on the side of the fence that believes that the actual election on Tuesday matters, there are people who don't think that there are people who think the election's already decided.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then there are people who are like, well, no. You know what I mean? If you're registered in a swing state, if you vote for Jill Stein on Tuesday, like, you might be voting your conscience, but you will be voting in a direction that will not contribute to, you know, Jill Stein or Hillary getting into the office.
Well, it's definitely not going to contribute to Jill Stein.
Of course. She's below, from last time I checked,
it's pretty much a protest vote.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
That's not lost on me.
Yeah.
That's why I say, my point is not to belittle a protest vote so much, but to say I'm glad that you're protesting in a blue state.
Right.
In
a state
California
where it doesn't matter.
Or in New York. If you were in Florida, or if you were in Ohio, or if you were in Colorado, and you're planning to vote for Jill Stein...
Yeah. Or like, anyone else in the Green Party.
Yeah, like, that's... I say vote green in every other...
state, but those swing states. I feel you.
Or maybe even, you know, are there any green senators you can vote for? Are there any green local officials that you can vote for? Like, why does it have to be, like, the highest office in the land that you're protesting the vote on?
Well,
when it really comes down to, like, your local elections.
It does. Agreed on that for sure, 100%. But I also think that, you know, a lot of people are disgusted with both candidates.
Oh, absolutely. I had not even a debate. I can't call it a debate, but, like, I was going back and forth with this guy yesterday who was just, like, so... He's like, because I always end an election post with hashtag never Trump. So he's like, well, why can't you be never Trump and never Hillary?
Mm.
But I'm more of a pragmatist, right?
Yeah.
Like, there are only two potential
candidates
who will be elected next week.
Him or her.
You know what I mean? So, like, it doesn't make sense for me to be never either of them, because that means that, like, I'm pulling... You know, now, that's not to say that, like, I'm hashtag I'm with her, right? Like,
No.
I need Hillary Rodham Clinton to be president next week. But I think it everything else, all of this debate and everything, all of that energy can be repurposed after Hillary is elected.
Right.
And we can
after she was, you could talk about this. Yeah.
Yeah, like, or it can be repurposed to make sure that, like, everybody, especially all of us black people, keep her accountable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I hold this, and it's not a popular necessarily sentiment, but I really hold the position that I don't think Bernie Sanders would have been an effective president. Mm. I think he's a great... I don't know much about Jill Stein, but I'm like, yo,
I don't think anyone seriously thinks that Jill Stein will be an effective anything. I think she's just there. I think she's just... Her name is there now because it's an alternative to people.
It's a woman alternative. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, Bernie, I'm not going to even talk about Jill because I don't like to talk about things that I don't know so much. But, like, Bernie is an advocate. Mm. Bernie is for the people. I would have hated for Bernie Sanders to get into office and then have to be able to, like, be this person, be this elected official that has to, you know, compromise.
Still bomb Syria.
Yeah, still do all of these different things that will then, like, let down the Bernie or Busters because he has to, like, fulfill the role as the president.
Just like the way a lot of people who voted Obama feel let down.
Yeah, let him, you know, I would rather Bernie not be president and not let anybody down because he can continue being the senator and, like, the advocate for the people and writing these bills and doing all of the things that he's effective doing instead of becoming this, potentially becoming this ineffective, you know, person that's causing, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say. So, and that's not like a slight to Bernie, but like, I don't think he would have been as great a president as he is a senator.
Or an advocate.
Or literally, like, the president is not to be an advocate. Like, the two, there are roles, you know what I mean? And those two roles don't overlap. You can kind of speak out. But you see, Obama's only really speaking out on a lot of things on his way out.
Out the door. Yeah.
Last lap Obama. You know what I mean? You saw that video. This is his last lap around the track. And he, like,
I think he'll miss it, but I think he can't wait to be done also. That's my opinion. I don't know. I clearly don't know Barack Obama.
He said if he was to do a third term, Michelle would divorce him.
Yeah. Yo, but the last year, is like, now a lot... People have always appreciated Michelle Obama, but now people are appreciating everything about her, like personality, her stature, her, you know, beauty.
Listen.
She's an attractive woman.
Like, listen, I'll put it out there. Michelle Obama above Barack.
Above
Barack. Like, I am just, she is just like FLOTUS Bae. Like, will never be another FLOTUS.
No.
Hopefully there'll be I don't know what you call the husband of FLOTUS. What are you going to call Bill, the husband of the United States?
Brodus.
What is Brodus?
Brodus.
But, like, there will never... I can imagine living the next 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50 years of my life and further on into my 80s, 90s, and 100 years old, and I will still say Michelle Obama is my FLOTUS.
Yeah. No.
And Barack is my POTUS, and... Unless she runs for office...
I don't think she should.
Maybe she shouldn't, but I'm saying unless she runs for office in some capacity, like, she is sealed in my mind as, like, the only FLOTUS that will ever really
matter.
If she
ever does run for office, it'll be years from now, because I think she still has to gain experience. Like, she's been active, but I think it's been very much behind the scenes active. Like, I know she had, like, the Healthy Foods Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, in order to, like, one day really run for president, she probably needs, like, a 12
years. I'm not even saying run for president, but, like...
No, I'm president.
I'm saying even if she becomes, like, the next Senator Obama, you know? Yeah. Like, there was, like, a rumor-type kind of few articles or so about how... When they go low, we go high. That was setting up her whole, like, campaign, pre-campaign type thing. So maybe she might run for Senate and whatnot. And then I was thinking, like, well, they say finally D.C. may become, like, the 51st state or something like
that. D.C. sucks, by the way. I was there last week, and I did not enjoy myself. Maybe
I always loved D.C. Shout out to Howard University.
Like, okay, Howard University. But I was on some...
But no, I don't really do D.C. too much.
No.
Unless I'm going to see family and friends. I don't go ahead.
That's all it should be.
I don't go to D.C. to hang. That's no, you know, it's not Chocolate City no more.
And it ain't Chocolate City. It's It's L.L. Bean and Pearls and Birkenstocks and CVS.
Yeah, like,
if I see another CVS, I'm going to
strangle. Do they even play go-go in D.C. anymore? Like,
the restaurants were good. Shout out to the Diplomat and the Pig. But, Mike, can you please plug us with anywhere we can all be blessed with your works?
Oh boy, okay, so I have a number of websites, right? Mm. First of all, you can always go to myperkins.com. That's MAIPERKINS.com. On MyPerkins, you'll see pretty much most of the articles that I've published, not only for Pop Mag, but also for the New Context, a couple of things I wrote for the New School's International Affairs publication.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple other things, some videos and whatnot, but uberlicious.nyc.com.
It's one of my favorites.
Uberlicious.nyc is where you can find a lot of the stories and insights. They're not just stories that I tell about my Uber rides, but sometimes I have insights about, you know, the Uber platform as a driver and where I feel like there might be some blind spots, you know, kind of critique and analysis in a way. Yeah.
Mai, thank you so much. I hope that you can come on again on the Global Citizen Podcast.
Thank you. No, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I didn't know what to expect or what. I feel like I ramble a lot.
No, but
scratched the surface. Maybe didn't even really get into anything too deep.
But now I know what you've been up to.
Yes.
I appreciate your honest opinions.
Thank you.
And everyone can catch this show on iTunes, MI83, Global Citizen Podcast. Check me out on Twitter, Global Citizen Podcast. Sorry, that's my... Check me out on Instagram, Global Citizen Podcast. Check me out on Twitter, Joey25. And shout out to Bedvine for letting us sit in their backyard and use their space.
Definitely, yes. Oh, and really quickly,
yeah.
I'm on Instagram at FlyMy16, and I'm on Twitter at FlyMy without the 16. So, I mean, pretty much it's either going to be FlyMy or UberliciousMy, but, you know, I'm around. I'm out there.
Shout out to both of those handles, and we'll definitely catch you on the flip side. Peace out, everybody. Thanks again to Mai for being on the podcast. Now get ready for the second part of the episode where we interview Tristan on final thoughts for this year's election. On the line, we have an old friend of the Global Citizen Podcast. Tristan, what up, man?
Hey, thanks, man. How's it going?
It's going good. Last time we spoke, which was like a year ago, you were living in Brooklyn. You were already married. But now there's a new addition to the family.
There is. I got a baby girl. Baby girl named Miriam.
Baby girl. I love you, baby girl. I love you.
We had to leave the beautiful, beautiful borough of Brooklyn and move to the bustling metropolis of Baltimore.
When you walk through the garden, better watch your back.
Down in the hole, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no. That's
not quite
great.
Not quite that life, but yeah.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, that was the theme song to The Wire. I was supposed to meet Tristan's beautiful baby girl, and I had pink eye. So, unfortunately, I didn't want to give her pink eye. I wouldn't be able to love myself.
Unfortunately you didn't get to meet her, but fortunately she didn't get picked.
Yeah, so. No. Out of it.
There we go.
They'd have been like, Joel, you're not welcome ever.
It wouldn't have been like that, but it would have been, we're not getting a lot of sleep, but we probably would have got like zero sleep.
Yeah.
So
what's that like, man? Like, let's just talk about fatherhood real quick. How has your life changed dramatically?
I mean, yeah, the sleep bit. I used to be that if I didn't get 8 hours of sleep, like I couldn't function, I couldn't do what I needed to do. But now it's like, oh no, I can get by with 5 or 6 hours of sleep. That's no problem. Yeah. Actually, I can do plenty of stuff. And so that's been kind of a good positive.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, it's just like the when you get married, it's like a one transition away from everything being about you, because now you got another person who you are making decisions with cooperatively.
Right. On behalf of someone's life.
Yeah. And then when you have a baby, you're like, oh man, I'm like, I'm like, my life is kind of done. Like all the things that, were just for me. Like, I don't really, there's not really any time for that anymore. And, yeah, so it's, and it's all about her. And, you know, I'm learning. It's hitting me more and more every day, but it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a really good thing.
So that means you haven't been catching up on Celtics basketball in the early part of the NBA season.
Well, so I mean, I do commute to DC for work, so I do have, you know, decent amount of free time, so I can, and I'm in this fantasy basketball league with you, so
yeah.
I am following a lot of that actually.
No, that's good. We'll always make time for that. That's good.
Yeah. No, it's an exciting year for them.
Yeah. No, it's a very good year. I do think though that they still are one piece away. They need another guy. They need someone, Boogie Cousins.
That'd be amazing.
I think that would really put you guys in the conversation for NBA finals. I think now it's just kind of, you guys fall in that category of teams after LeBron in the East, which is a good place to be. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they're good. If the Celtics were going to really make a push, they would be like that Detroit Pistons team in the mid-2000s, like 2006 or whatever, 2005.
Yeah, but that Pistons team had size, though. They had Ben Wallace and Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, definitely. No, they've got a lot of front court players on the Celtics and not really any – I don't think they've got much like defensive presence, but I don't really know.
But anyway, we could talk about basketball all day. The main reason I have you on is because Judgment Day is near. Judgment Day, a.k.a. Election Day, in the good old U.S. of A. And I've been, you know, in my time here, so I head back to the continent the day after the results come out. And I set it up nicely. But, you know, I think you put me
to get out, you mean?
To get out.
Right.
When I look back, I'll just see flames behind me. But I think you put me on to a few websites and some articles, namely 538, Nate Silver's website, which I've been refreshing a lot. And as of now, Hillary has a 64.4% chance of winning, and Donald has a 35.6% chance of winning. How do you feel? I mean, how much stock do you take into this? And are you registered to vote in New York or in BMOR?
In Baltimore, in Maryland. But the New York and Baltimore are both so, they're solid blue states. So, yeah, if Hillary were to lose either of those states, that means that she's lost the election in a landslide.
Right.
So that's not going to happen. But, I'm registered here. A bunch of local politics I'm trying to understand, which are kind of crazy, and I don't really get them. Because it took me a long time to understand local New York politics, and then now...
Now you gotta leave.
Baltimore.
Start over.
From what I've heard, from what, like, cab drivers and stuff have told me, Baltimore is just this, like, super corrupt city. But about this presidential election, man, I don't even know. It's kind of wild and, like, ludicrous, and I have no idea what is going on. I don't think that Trump will win. I do think that if either of these candidates wins, it doesn't really matter which one, it's going to be really messy the next 4 years. If Hillary wins, the Republicans are going to try to impeach her, or they're going to investigate her constantly. It's going to be really messy. If Trump wins, oh man, it's going to be crazy how many people are going to try and go after him. It's just going to be a really messy, contentious time. And for me, the main issue is that people right now in the United States want to have a really good debate, public debate about political issues. And people are taking a lot of different positions, like across the political spectrum, from the moderate left of Bernie Sanders to the far right of like Trump or Ted Cruz or some of these guys, Gary Johnson.
Mm.
And And it's too bad that the presidential election has to basically be between the candidates that exist, because, I mean, there's Bernie Sanders isn't there. He should be there. And then these other, I mean, Jill Stein is I like the Green Party platform, but I'm not, you know, Jill Stein's not the greatest candidate. And Trump, he's got a lot of, I mean, people like hearing his message on trade and I guess immigration. That's a political issue that has been dodged for 10 years.
Yeah, but I mean, what's Trump really saying on anything, or Hillary for that matter? I mean, what Trump has to say on immigration? I mean, you know, immigration has been pretty bad since Obama. I mean, it's always been pretty bad, but since Obama, I believe we've deported more people than we've ever had. So I don't know what people are complaining about. Not that it's a good thing, but I just think it's kind of, you know, kind of a made up argument, a made up complaint, a made up fear that these people are coming from all over and taking jobs and flooding the market or whatever. I've heard some really pretty stupid arguments in my short time in the States.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're totally right. I think people don't understand the facts. I think, I mean, the right-wing media says that Obama's letting a bunch of immigrants come in because they're going to vote Democratic. But all the immigrant rights groups call him the deporter in chief. He's deported more people than like the past five presidents or something.
No.
Immigration to the U.S. is at a net zero or something. So they don't understand the facts. But then I heard this. It was like on NPR or something. They're talking about this story of a community in Minnesota, I think, who had a lot of Somali refugees.
Oh, is this where the guy they were planning on bombing, like a Somali market or a mosque or something like that?
I mean, that I heard about that. I don't know if it was in this community. No, this was like a couple years ago. But basically, there was like a community. There was an altercation at a restaurant where this like white woman was just like people. The two women at the restaurant were speaking Somali. I don't actually know what the language.
Yeah, it's Somali.
Somali, yeah. So speaking Somali, and like a woman was like speak English and actually like hit the woman in the face with a glass, and it was like anyway. But this community of white people just like couldn't deal with African immigrants to their community, and they like flipped out, and they had like this community meeting where they're like, can you just stop sending refugees here? And they're talking to their congressman, and he's like, you can't. He didn't understand what they were even asking. They just kept saying, can you have a timeout? Can you have a timeout? And he's like, you don't get to decide who comes to your community.
Yeah.
He's like, that's not what America is. You can't decide who comes and lives in your community. That's not what we do. But I think that's what some people want to do, and that's emerged. I mean, that's actually always been there. It's always been here, and it's just come up again. I think it's just that racism and that segregation mentality that's as old as the United States itself.
Yeah, agreed. I also think that despite who wins this election, the damage has been done. You know, racist, full-blown racists now have a soapbox to stand on, and that's the one thing Trump has really provided them. And one of the things I actually appreciate about Trump is that now no one can say that we're living in a post-racial society. Like, that argument, they could take it and kind of, you know, shove it up their asses. I mean, there's no way in hell anyone can say that, you know, we are all kumbaya. That has gone to complete shit, if you ask me.
Yep.
But let me ask you this question. What do you say to people who are like, you know what, I can't vote for either of these candidates, I'm going to vote green? Or do you think that this is the time and the place to do that? Or do you think they should choose, if they don't want Trump, they should just choose Hillary, despite the fact that many people are not very fond of her?
I think it depends on what state you're voting in. If you're voting in a swing state, then yeah, you should vote for Hillary, not because you not because you think that she is great, but just it's like a tactical decision, you know? It's
so like that's Nevada, North Carolina, Florida.
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. I mean, Pennsylvania, Ohio. She has a pretty good chance of winning. Ohio, okay. It looks pretty bad in Ohio.
Okay. I haven't looked at the map, but yeah, if you're in one of these swing states, I mean, 538 says that Maryland is going to go to Hillary with a 99.9% of the chance, the probability. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of people in this state who are going to vote for her, and so I can vote for, I think I am going to vote for the Green Party, because, I mean, it's all a tactical thing with presidential elections for me, so... I don't want Trump to win. I think that would be really bad. If the Green Party gets, if any party gets 5% of the popular vote, then they qualify for government financing, or some government money. So that just increases their ability to get their platform or to do more outreach on their platform and get the message out. And I think the Green Party platform is pretty. It's what a lot of people want. It's like take care of the environment. Don't have a prison industrial complex. Don't have a war on poor people. Don't pollute. I kind of forget what some of the other stuff is, but it's stop police killings. It's stop exploitation of poor people by 1% or whatever.
Right.
And it's like pretty common sense stuff. It's like just be like really good people. Let's be good people. It's like a really critical time in not just in the U.S. but in the history of the world, and we need to really be together on this and work together and not continue to demonize and scapegoat and try and push some people down, a lot of people down. But to me, just one last thing.
Yeah,
I think the biggest thing to me about this election is just how fed up people are with this political system, and it just points out the deep degree to which our political system in the U.S. is in crisis. There is just no trust for either of these candidates. So it's because it's boggling. People who like Democrats look at Trump and go, "He's a pathological liar. Everything comes out of his mouth is a lie. You always have to fact check him, and 90% of the time, he made something up." But people on the right go, "Oh, I trust Trump. I trust Trump. I don't trust Hillary. She's a liar." And they like are talking about two different things. Like, yeah, Trump, all the facts he supposedly lays out are lies.
False.
But yeah, but
not
you look at
true.
You look at
not
this guy.
True.
but he's super honest. He doesn't try and like pretend that he's like this nice guy. He's like, "No, I'm a bully, and I will take advantage of anybody I can, and I'm a strong man, and that's what I am, and that's what I do, and that's how I solve problems." Hillary's like, "Oh, I'm like so with you. I love you guys. I'm really down." But she's, but then behind the scenes, she does what she has to do. And it's two different interpretations of what is trustworthy. And it's just, that's a debate that's going to play out. And that has to get resolved at some point. And I feel like if people can, they should vote for not necessarily the candidate, but for the party that has their values, and because that's going to help to solve the problem going down the line, because there is a real political crisis.
There is,
and just getting Hillary elected is not going to solve that crisis.
I don't think it's going to solve much, to tell the truth. I mean, I definitely do think that if she is elected, which I believe she will be elected, it definitely saves women's rights, and it will keep the Affordable Care Act. I think those are the two main things that would be at... I mean, there are a lot of things that would be at stake if Trump wins, but those are the two kind of definite things. For me, personally, I don't think much else would change. I also think the damage has been done. I think foreign policy probably would go to shit with Trump. That'd be really bad. I think now he's probably being pushed by someone. I'm curious to know who is, managing everything in Trump's party. Who are those people,
Yeah, I mean, his campaign manager is, the head of the... He used to be the head of that right-wing website, Breitbart.
Breitbart?
Breitbart. It's like a news site. So I think it's, one of the first times that a journalist has gone over to the political side to run a campaign. Because journalists are supposed to be, you know, separate from that whole process. And, yeah, he's jumped right in. And, yeah, I don't know.
Do you think people are going to miss Obama?
I think so, yeah. Don't you?
Yeah, I already kind of miss him. Yeah. And it's really interesting, man, just to see news about the United States from abroad. It just looks like such a shit show right now.
What do you mean? What are people talking about?
Just everything that goes on. I mean, not necessarily like Kenyan news or anything like that. I mean, definitely Kenyan news talks about it. But like when you watch BBC or Al Jazeera about the U.S. and you're in another country, and it just we just look like, you know, a crumbling empire. You know, the current political situation, black people being executed on camera. It doesn't look good. But when you're here, you know, in New York, you're fine. I'm like, oh, great. You know, let's just go and do New York stuff and spend a lot of money. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where we end up, but I definitely think Hillary's going to win. Have you, last question for you, because I know you have a child to raise. Final prediction, do you think Hillary wins in a landslide? Or do you think it's kind of like neck and neck? Do you think she pulls away down the last 100 meters? Like, what do you think?
I have no idea, and I'm not going to make a prediction. I would assume that she wins by a pretty comfortable margin, but yeah. That one thing they're saying is that she has a good lead in the popular vote, but not a good lead in the Electoral College.
Yeah.
So, because a lot of the groups, the people that would vote for her are not well represented in some of the swing states. Basically, like not white people without a college degree are not going to vote for her.
No.
Yeah. And so that's a problem. So, yeah, her Electoral College lead is slim. So we'll see. I mean, yeah. I assume she'll win by, you know, a decent amount in the popular vote, but we'll see how it all plays out in the states.
Last question for you. Actually, we have another last question. So, you know, your family, you guys come from a pretty diverse background, and I guess I'm just asking you because you're on the show. But how have you dealt with those tense political conversations? Like, you know, for me, I had a fight. What do we call a fight? But I had a heated discussion with a cousin of mine who didn't say who he or she was voting for, but I could tell who his or her friends were voting for after we started debating about Colin Kaepernick. But how have you dealt with tense conversations? Have you dealt with them? Have you kind of just been like, you know what? I'm just going to sit this one out and play with my baby.
I mean, kind of. I don't, like, my extended family, I don't really get into politics with. And it's not that I avoid it, but I think they don't agree with me. And I think Facebook algorithm, like, probably takes my political posts and doesn't show it to them or something. So they don't really, we never have the opportunity to get into a debate, but... Right. But yeah, I mean, with my immediate family, like, yeah, we have these conversations but there's respect and a lot of people listen. And so actually my dad wrote a op-ed to the local paper denouncing Trump because of inciting like his family, like his new multiracial family and how, you know, that's the future of the United States. And,
yeah, Bob.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I'm blessed that my immediate family, and it's just me and my parents, that we have open debate and we've had it for a long time. But yeah, the extended family, I don't even know. I don't even know how to get into it with them.
Yeah.
I actually don't even know where they stand on this. I don't think they're Trump, or I don't think a lot of them are Trump supporters.
Right.
Probably some, but I don't even know. I think it's best sometimes it's just best not to engage and to just do your own thing, like do your own thing and like promote your own message, but don't engage with them. Just be like, or not to not engage with them, but don't like pick a fight with them. That's what I choose to do.
Right.
I would just say like, oh, this is the right way to approach this problem. And just kind of like, almost like assume they're on board with me. And then they're kind of in a weird position of having to tell me that my like humane approach is wrong or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just choose to keep it quiet. But Tristan, thanks for taking some time and being on the show. Good luck on Tuesday.
Yeah. Thanks, fam. You too.
Yeah.
And I hope when you got from JFK, you know, it doesn't blow up behind you.
No, me too. I don't think it will, but I'm actually happy I'm leaving a few days after. It's a good strategy.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's good to be back on the pod.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being back. We'll be back again. Talk about dedicating the next one all to basketball, just the way we like it.
Nice.
All right, man.
All right, peace.
Hey, yo, my man, Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fife Diggy.